that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Yuck Mala! Yuck Mala! Welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is Season 11, Enter the Octagon. I am your host, Hack Adu. So happy to be with you today, and I am so happy to be joined by my friends. I have the infidel, Jack Hall.
I believe you mean Hack Hall.
Hack Hall. And also, we are joined by the Marine, Hack Boxer.
Will somebody close the fucking door?
You want to get your head blown off? That's funny for people who've seen the movie we're talking about. Otherwise, you're lost.
And we've also got... Assalamu alaikum, Hack Kata.
After this episode, I just know I'm going to lose my pension.
Well, perhaps you could put a fucking super trace on it.
Super trace. We're into it, because that super trace was freaking brilliant. Oh,
well, all right. He was freaking brilliant.
Start with the idea of this season.
This season.
What
yes.
The second? What the sub season is, and then what it's
Well, this season it's already funny, but this season is called "Keep It in the Family," where we choose movies that have the lesser known siblings of actual big name stars.
That's not this season. That's the sub season.
Oh, sub season. Sure. Yes. Okay. Fair enough.
It's just season like. Tucked within another season. Yeah.
It is.
It's meta.
It's 8 seasons tucked within one season.
It's like a Russian doll of seasons.
It's the Turducken of podcasts.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah, that's it.
The what of podcasts?
The Turducken of podcasts. Oh, yes.
I thought he said the Gawken.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, it's sort of, but...
More like a super group, so it's like, I don't know, like the Honeymooner, the Honey Drippers of podcasts.
Well, I don't know that they were a super group. They were just Robert Plant and some guys, but, I mean...
All right, so...
Anyways.
We have 8 different season concepts competing, with the winner being what the season we'll do next year is. And this was, as you were saying there, Stan.
That's
I
right.
mean, Hack.
Hack. Yes, we're all hacked today. But
at least Hack all sounds right.
And finally, so the movie that we decided to watch in this case is called Terror in Beverly Hills, starring everybody's favorite Frank Stallone.
And I can say that having seen Rambo Last Blood this week, he is the most talented Stallone.
Oh, God, we got to do that one. It's terrible.
Oh, my God, what happened there?
Yeah, it when we get to a big budget one, because there's so many times in that movie that I ask the question I ask on this podcast all the time, what is happening in this movie and why?
Well, I mean, you're like, man, if only Frank was in here to save it.
Right.
Yeah, if only Frank was sitting in his dojo getting ready.
You know? Oh, my.
But, all right. So, Hack Boxer, tell us what Hack Stone does in this movie and what it's all about.
Well, Hack Stone has very little to do with the movie, really. Terrorists decide to come to America Beverly Hills in particular, and kidnap a VIP, which turns out to be the president's daughter. It's up to an elderly police force and Frank Stallone, for some reason, to get her back.
That was very succinct. I'll give you credit.
It's not a complex movie.
But thankfully,
the elderly police force is going to be one of the best watches. Yes.
Thankfully, all the complexity of the movie was brought by the nuanced performance of Cameron Mitchell.
I was so happy when I saw Cameron Mitchell. I had 3 exclamation marks in my notes here when Cameron Mitchell showed up as the police captain, who has the broadest powers of any police captain in history.
And the foulest mouth.
That's right. I made the comment to Jack, when we talked earlier this week, I said that Cameron Mitchell may need to be nominated for sainthood again, simply based on how amazing he is in this movie right here.
It would probably be the right thing to do.
tell the listeners that you mentioned the Super Trace. What's the Super Trace?
Well, the terrorists, the terrible terrorists that have kidnapped the president's daughter, they have, made a phone call to, a list of demands. And in his, I'm going to guess, drunken rampage, Cameron Mitchell starts yelling at the cops around them. And they're like, oh, it wasn't on long enough to get a trace. And Cameron Mitchell's like, I need a trace. You mean like a super trace? Yeah, that's right. I need a fucking super trace.
Yeah, that's right. He's like, no, get a trace on it. No, a super trace.
Yeah, I need a fucking super trace. Yes. Like everything that this is why he is the greatest thing ever, because there's so many moments in this movie where it will be like life is going on. He's on the screen. He'll say something that doesn't actually respond to what the other actors are saying to him, which is totally, totally fine.
It just doesn't make him unique in this film either.
Yeah. And then he'll like suddenly just fly off the handle and start yelling shit at people, which is great. And then of course there's that one moment where the airplane goes overhead during his press conference.
Which, really not in the script.
Is absolutely not in the script and is one of the single greatest moments in like movie history, because he just like ripped shit.
Well, he starts his line and then you can hear a plane. You see him look up and he goes, "Damn, plane flying overhead." Then he finishes his line and they left it in.
That was the take that they're like, that was gold. that was the one.
That's what somebody would actually say. The problem with this movie is nothing happens for the first 25 minutes. Then what happens at the 25-minute mark isn't interesting. And it's 40 minutes until James or Cameron Mitchell shows up. Once Cameron Mitchell shows up, the movie does take it's a new level. But that's the big problem with this movie. This movie's only like 80-something minutes, so it is like 88 minutes, something like that. And like 40 minutes until Cameron Mitchell shows up. But
do establish that Middle Eastern people are all evil in that first little bit.
Yeah, like I say, nothing happens. Yeah. It's good to see that 1989 racism was it wasn't racism against people of the Middle East is not a new thing.
Oh, and Indians and black people, so.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, once he shows up, the film, luckily, it's saved.
I think, so we get this little tiny bit of Frank Stallone as Hack Stone, the karate master teacher who is...
Former Marine.
Well,
It says first in his first scene, former Green Beret. Then then you see that his outfit, which is a Marine outfit, and they call him a Marine outfit for the rest of the movie. Yeah.
Essentially the same thing.
Special, like I'll use special with air quotes, forces.
You can't get bogged down in the details.
No, not in this movie.
He, uh, So he shows up in these little bits at talking to another character. And for more than half of this film, the other guy he talks to appears to be the star of the movie. And yeah. I was like, maybe this is one of those ones where they slap Frank Stallone's name on the box to get, you know, well, to get the kind Frank of sales that are Frank Stallone.
They only had 2 days of shooting with him.
You can't. They couldn't afford.
They only had
time
it for 2 days.
Yeah.
But no, yeah. So they had to fit in what they could. So
I would love to know what he was doing on other days.
Well, yeah, it was a day of the action, though, and a day of the action. I say with air quotes that people can't say, but a day of the action, and then a day of the dialogue, was basically what they had him for.
I have other information about this movie as well. He was actually brought in for 3 days.
Oh.
But they brought in. He went in. For this third day, the filmmaker showed up without film.
Nice.
So he was bitching. Cameron Mitchell was like, "I've never seen anything like this before." Frank did not trust these filmmakers whatsoever, and so for doing the entire movie as a whole, he asked for his money up front before every day of shooting. And so he got it, his agent got him his money for that day, and he left.
That's true, actually. I did know that. That will actually come in relevant when we do our next film. I'm going to do a callback to this. I'm going to do a callback on our next movie we're doing to that particular point. But yes, the crazy thing is the guy who directed this is he's a character actor, being in like 80 movies, like, you know, and TV shows. And he wrote two of the best comedies of all time, I think. And well, maybe not The Prize Fighter. The Prize Fighter was pretty good with Conway and Knotts, but The Private Eyes, one of the greatest comedies of all time with Conway and Knotts. And yet,
oh, I love that movie. Absolutely love that movie.
Yes. One of the great comedies of all time. And then he wrote and directed this. Which is, I'm pretty sure, like, this is an Israeli production. I'm pretty sure he wrote, they're like, come here and film a movie. You have whatever, from now until you get here, we'll buy you a plane ticket. From now until you get here to write a script. And he just wrote a script, I'm pretty sure, on the plane, and that's what they had. Because they clearly had a script, but it might be the worst script. Like, because a lot of the films we have, they clearly don't have a script. Here, they clearly had a script, but it's like the worst script ever.
I actually had to stop the film several times to figure out when this was made, to figure out if people were like not educated enough to understand that none of this makes sense. Like,
which part?
The Secret Service aren't there. Regular cops are handling fucking everything.
Yeah.
I mean, this came out after SWAT, the SWAT. TV show. So people knew like LA had a like SWAT team and stuff. But they don't show up in this movie. It's street cops doing everything.
Nothing in this, no institution in this movie or character behaves the way institutions in real life or characters behave. The news station doesn't behave right. The president and the government doesn't behave right. Like nothing behaves in a way that's realistic. They didn't bother. They just didn't bother to try.
Street cops who are alternately called FBI, depending on which scene you're in.
Yes.
they are either police detectives or the FBI. Possibly both.
Although if this is indeed like Israeli propaganda, it does make more sense than I've ever made of this movie before.
It's less Israeli propaganda and more their attempt to having seen what happened with Canon Films, these producers are hoping they could also just get in on the American market.
Oh, this is canon. Everything makes sense.
No, it's not
now.
Canon. It's not canon. But they were trying to be. It was more really filmmakers were trying to enter the American market like Canon Films did.
I'd say it's pretty heavy-handed anti-Muslim though. I mean, not only the usual Arab terrorist thing that of course is super common in the 80s, you know, they're not even good Muslim terrorists because they hang out in a strip joint at one point.
Yes.
Like which is a little out of character for your Muslim extremist.
Peacock Films, by the way, is the company that did it. But yeah, no, it's those, when you talk about I mean, there's TNA, and then there's gratuitous TNA. This might be the most gratuitous TNA ever. Because it's just like a woman in a thong, and it's really close up, and it just sits, there's no point to it, and you just for like 30 seconds are just looking at a woman's ass. And the same thing when it shows you the breasts. It's just like a close-up of breasts. You don't see the face. You don't see the rest of the body. It's just breasts of some woman, and it just doesn't leave. And it's just close-up, and just clearly for the sake of, let's get this in and get a lot of it in right now.
We have a scene with them on an airplane at the beginning. There's a little kid with a toy gun. And I had this, like, you know, back in the day when you could bring a toy gun on the plane. And then I see, you know, the stewardess service. I'm like, how wide are these aisles? Speaking of about the good old days. Of airplanes, for sure.
People had leg room. People had room for like two people could walk past each other and not even really bump shoulders or anything like that. I mean, that's just crazy, you know. I wanted to call this movie though Terror in the Warehouse District of Beverly Hills. That's essentially
it's not Beverly Hills at all. Don't worry, yeah. Terror in some place in Israel we're hoping looks like it. Beverly Hills is more like it.
When they snag the president's daughter, it is on Rodeo Drive, which, like, so Cameron Mitchell gets to say the line, "Move your ass to Rodeo Drive."
That's true. There is a quick. Oh man! Oh man! It's impossible to imagine that. So much went wrong with this film.
Did it? Was it planned to be any better than it is?
Oh, I think so. I think that it wasn't planned to be better than it is. I think it's that they didn't care if it was better than it is. Like, it was just like, we're just going to do it. We got Frank Stallone. That's money.
It's a bankable star like a Frank Stallone.
Yeah, for sure. That you got for 2.5 days. Yeah.
Here's the pitch. They went into the office and they're like, I need $1 million to make a movie. I've got a big star. Who's that star? You guessed it. Frank Stallone. Yeah.
Do you know the name Stallone?
and I'm pretty sure it went, is that enough? We also have a helicopter, which we can put in 40 minutes of the movie for no reason. And they went, good enough.
I love that
they were like, got to get their money out of that helicopter, let me tell you.
Very, very late in the film, Frank Stallone's family gets kidnapped, and they're taken to a secret location because they're going to use them as bargaining tools. And they're like, Cameron Mitchell, he goes back. He's like, we're going to find your family. And then immediately a helicopter calls in and says, hey, I just saw this woman and a kid being hustled into a building. Yeah, that's probably them. And yeah, the tension of that lasts about a minute and a half.
And then they send another one of their aging police force.
Well, not only that, but the timeline from the point where the terrorist, the head terrorist dude sits there and goes, oh, that's Hack Stone, my former best friend who's responsible for my wife and kids' death, which we haven't mentioned yet. That's fantastic. So former best friend who's responsible. He's like, I see him out there. Then he places the call to the terrorists who about 30 seconds later are at the house to kidnap them. Like, time is not an issue in this movie. Like, everybody apparently can, you know, it's just, oh man, but this was something else.
The sexual tension between Frank Stallone and the bad guy is there.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, I have pictures of all my friends, which I stare at wistfully.
That was when
they hate me.
That was going to be my WTF. So when Frank Stallone was first introduced, they're in his office at the karate place, and he's talking to the guy who I thought was the main character of the film. And, I was confused because of him having three times as much screen time as Frank Stallone. And the guy says, hey, what's this photo of you and some guy? And Frank Stallone says, oh, yeah, that guy hates me because he blames me for the death of his family. And I hope I never see him again. And I'm like, what, why is that photo on the wall? Yeah. Why is that there?
It's a constant reminder.
Yeah, I know.
If anything else. Well, it's also, like, that's the only one that I got with, like, you know, Jeff in it or something. Like, it's...
What a coincidence also that the guy happens to ask about the guy at the same time as he's, and he tells us all about him at the exact same time as the guy's finally flying over to America to kill him, to kill Hackstone. Like, that's, oh, what a, what lucky, how lucky has that?
That's quite a coinky dink.
Almost. Yeah, this movie's something. it's something. Oh my gosh. Okay. Should we get to scoring?
I think so, because I expect a lot of this movie is going to come up at some point, say, you know, maybe during the WTFs.
Yeah, I may have marked half of my notes as. All right. In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category we call schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because it's like Jack said, for the first like 30 odd minutes, this movie is really boring. Like it's just such a standard action movie. Like, oh, we're going to introduce the Palestinian terrorists. We're going to introduce our theoretical protagonist, and we're going to kind of feed you all the background of the story, coincidentally, of course. And you know, we said once Cameron Mitchell jumps in, then it becomes schlock all the time whenever he's there, and then his scene with Frank Stallone is genius. So,
oh my god,
I have to go to a 9 simply based on the last hour, but I can't go to a 10 because of the first half hour.
Yeah, this schlock is heavy with this one. I mean, just the fact that they have a Stallone in it and it's not the one you're thinking of is a pretty schlocky thing to do. Cameron Mitchell ups the schlock as well. The sheer racism and playing on people's fears with the terrorist angle, schlocky. I won't go quite as high, but I will give it an 8.
Well, yeah, and I'm going even lower because first 40 minutes, a 3, the last 45 minutes, a 10. So if I cut that in half, it's 6.5. The last 45 minutes is slightly longer, plus how things work, things round up. So I'm going to a 7.
All right, then. I mean, it starts from, you know, always starts from the marketing. How is this movie presented? I actually was way, enjoyed the beginning of this movie way more than the rest of you. I thought it was really digging deep into the use of vacation video, vacation film to show the country he came from, you know, establishing the bad guys 20 minutes before you've introduced a good guy. I'm all the way up to a 10 on this.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow. Fantastic.
Our second category is called More Heart Than Budget, and I don't think we found a budget.
It's impossible to find.
I didn't come across, yeah.
Yeah.
No, and
given the film stock, like, we know it was not... It all went to Frank Stallone's cocaine if it was the amount of money left.
Well, that's the problem, right? I mean, this is a movie that obviously the filmmakers were completely out of their element for. They had no general idea what they were doing. And, you know, that whole story about them not showing up with film. And I know that Frank Stallone did the vast majority of his movies simply to get a paycheck so that he could, you know, keep working on his music career. But this is, there's no doubt, a paycheck movie for him. And we know that for Cameron Mitchell, the money went into his drinking habit. So I'm only going to give this a 5.
Wow, you really shit on this movie and then gave it like a mediocre score.
Well, that's because they made this movie, and there are people that, and like, I can't fault it because when Frank Stallone and Cameron Mitchell are on the screen, it's, I want to watch this movie. I know why they were there, but I want to watch this movie.
No, I have to go lower than that. Just on the basis of, yeah, nobody wants to be here. I will give it a 4 just because this is the drunkest we've ever seen Tama Mitchell on screen. And they kept him upright in some scenes. Not all.
That is saying something to say that this is drunk as we've seen.
Yes, because we've seen him pretty fucking drunk.
So 4.
Oh, I wish I could even go to 4. But it's just so obvious that, like I say, I know that there's enough people on this that know better. I know that John Myers knows better. I know he does because I've seen his other work. And he wrote and directed this. And there's just so little effort put into trying to, like, such a little lack of effort. Like, even the films, like, those films that they put in the effort but they don't have the skill is one thing, and you score those high in more heart than budget. The films where they have the skill and don't care enough to try at all, it kills it. It hurts me because, I mean, this is an experience I don't want people to miss out on, those last 45 minutes. And James and Cameron Mitchell, but 2.
Ouchie. You talked me out of my score, so 5. all right. It doesn't matter. Please inform everyone that you're self-isolating. Yes. For 2 weeks, it is time for what the fuck moments.
Oh, and there's gonna be. I've got a list. It's all right. So, like, just there's some little things in this, like the list covers so much, but like honestly, there's some crazy stuff. Like, there's a moment where we're in Beverly Hills on Rodeo Drive, some classy lady. Walks her dog up to a parking meter. The car drives away. She ties her dog to the parking meter and then feeds the meter for the dog. And it's just like, what the hell did
I missed that completely.
That was funny. I liked that.
It's hilarious, but it's just like, that is not, like, where does that belong in this action movie?
If it happened a little bit faster, I would have been on the floor. It was just so slow that it was like, hey, that was kind of cute.
Is it the same woman that gets out and like pays the cabbie with $100 bill and says, keep the change?
Yeah, that's right.
It's the same woman, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like we need one person to sum up how rich this neighborhood is for the people who don't know what Rodeo Drive is.
Yeah, and she so, was that.
So is your mom available?
And then there's the attack on the store, where they kidnap the president's daughter. And now this is amazing because they shoot about 500, bullets, and maybe about 20 actually wind up hitting anything. There's one mirror that kind of gets slightly broken. And then right near the end, people start coming out of the change rooms, and every one of them, they're spraying wildly with the guns. And then people are like, oh, I got shot in the gut. I'm like, weren't shooting anywhere near your gun. But
what gets me is bullets are going off. You hear people screaming, and they all walk out slowly, like they're taking a look, like, huh, what's going on out here? Like, they have no urgency or anything. They just kind of step out, and it's like nobody's ducking, nobody's anything. They're dead immediately. But it was a chance to get into some more nudity.
That's right. Then we've got the TV station, which does not look like a TV station. I'm not sure completely what it looks like. It almost looks like a recording studio in its own way. But my favorite part of that is the news anchor, who is absolutely awful. But when the phone rings, thankfully the news anchor is waiting there to answer the phone.
I did love that. I'm trying to work out what the structure of the news station is, that he's doing reports, and the phone that's on the desk that's usually a prop is just the phone.
It's like they
watched news and they see the phone and they didn't understand any of the concept, and it's like, oh, he must answer the phone for the station.
The anchor desk is the same person. Yeah, the anchor and the anchor desk is the same place, because literally the bad guy, it starts like this. The bad guy calls and goes, hello, TV station. And he goes, yes, it is.
Porter is just awesome. I will come back to that reporter because he is something.
Yes. Oh,
there's
yes.
More. There's more yes, with him.
There is. So then, then we'll jump ahead to the bean factory where the terrorists are holding the president's daughter. Now the police arrive at the bean factory, so they're pulling up. They're driving in like crazy. I love it because they've edited the shots. Where they've locked the camera off, they've edited the shot so one car drives by and then they do a cut to another car driving by. But of course, the dust that's kicked up is completely different. So it's obvious that there's a cut each time a car drives by. I found it quite funny. The guy that we thought was supposed to be our hero. Whatever. I wanted to call him Larry. I don't know why, but look, I'll call him Larry for fun.
I called him Larry Stallone because he looked a lot like Frank Stallone.
but they dress him up as an EMT to go in there and help out the terrorist that's been shot. But they take him into the bean factory. Now, we've already established that they know exactly where they are in the bean factory because they're looking at each other through binoculars. But when they get him in, they blindfold him so that they can walk him through the bean factory. And I'm like, it's a fucking bean factory. Like everybody knows where you are. It's not like you're driving him like 16 blocks and he's got to try to, okay, you know, 1, 2, turn right. No, it's none of that stuff.
Couldn't they just be making sure he can't tell them how many terrorists there are?
Oh, I suppose, but
I'm falling into this trap of explaining things that the movie doesn't. Yes. I know I do that from time to time where I have filled in a blank that the movie did not think of.
I love, there's a guy that, because they had the helicopter, so that they have a guy who's hanging from the helicopter who they bring in to go onto the roof, and I thought, oh, well, maybe that's supposed to be Hack Stone making his grand entrance in a helicopter.
And really? Then, I went the other way. I thought it was Kyle or Larry, as you're calling him. Or I don't know his name either. I called him Kyle.
The other Stallone.
I thought that's how they were getting the paramedic in for some reason, because it's not explained at all.
And so, but this guy, like, he's walking along there, and it's just like, oh, it's all good. And then he winds up getting right in front of a fucking window and gets shot immediately. And I'm like, oh, well, that wasn't a very good plan. So Hack finally comes in. They outfit him with a gun, an M16, and a big rope, which he never, ever used. He took the rope off to fight Abdul.
Oh, for sure, yeah. At the end, I saw him with the rope, and I'm like, I now have to go back because did this rope reappear, or did he actually have it? The only thing I can think is that once they're inside, they made the mistake of dressing the terrorist and Frank Stallone in really similar clothing.
Yes,
and that's all I could think of is like, is that why he's wearing it? Like, is that why he has a rope the entire time?
Oh, yeah.
Like, is it just like they screwed up and dressed them in the same clothing? Wouldn't be able to tell them apart.
And then there's this fantastic moment. So Hack gets there. He's you know, not really sneakily going into the bean factory. He reaches down, he grabs a bean, tosses it in his mouth, starts chewing, and then for the next 5 minutes, he's still chewing the same bean. And I'm like, the hell? Like, why did you... What was that for?
I thought it was very strange that he, you know, stopped to have a snack on the way in.
Yes, exactly.
Like, especially... abandoned bean factory. It's obviously been shut down for a really long time. Ooh, there's food on the floor. Let's pick it up and eat it.
They still have beans.
Protein is protein.
These must be good. We talked earlier about the raid to save, raid on that house to save Hack's family. Now, this is a masterful piece where they completely didn't record audio at all. The entire scene has almost no natural sound. So, like, there's people walking around, opening the fridge, doing all this stuff. Like, no sounds made whatsoever, except for these random moments where they decide, oh, we better add something there just to be sure. It's incredibly weird for me to watch. And then my last note is, Jose, the Palestinian terrorist?
Yeah, I got that too.
There's a lot here. I feel safe to go with a strong 10.
Score. You did so many, and you didn't hit any of my favorites.
I know.
Oh, that's amazing. Number one for me was what I'm calling the presidential rec room. I never pictured the Oval Office as having wood paneling before, but I always will now.
There was a seal behind him, so you know it was him.
Yeah. The naked women in the back of the pickup truck.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The
was
helicopter
that going away. From the bad guy's plan, because that was the only reason I could think of they went to the strip club directly before.
I'm pretty sure that was the Israeli guys going, you know, in America, women just walk around nude, right? So put them in. That's common in Beverly Hills for topless women to be sunbathing in the back of a pickup truck.
And on the highway. This may be explainable somehow, and maybe you guys can clue me in on this one. But is there such thing as an American tea?
No.
Because one of the bad guys asks for some tea, and his compatriot says, American tea?
Yeah, and then he's like, no, regular tea.
Yeah, I've never heard of American tea, no.
No.
No, I'm pretty sure that isn't a thing.
Maybe he means in a bag instead of loose? I don't know.
Could be. Yeah. I mean, I would think of that as British.
No,
but... What else?
You know, I know the Middle Eastern has different types of coffee, but I thought Middle Eastern tea, I've never heard of this. I'd like to give it a try. But no, I had another one, but it's escaping me at the minute, and I'm sure you guys will fill it in. So I'm passing this along. But yeah, I'm going with a 9 on this one. This movie is bug nuts.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's so many. I love the first time that Cameron Mitchell meets Frank Stallone's Hackstone character.
The Marine.
because he's like, where is this Marine? I'm sure he did it with more profanity, but where is the Marine? And then the camera scrolls up as Cameron Mitchell looks up and he's standing in front of him like 4 feet in front of him. I'm like, how did he get there and you missed it? He's right. He's like,
and he's leaning against something. Like
leaning against a car.
The fucking president's daughter is being kidnapped, but Hackstone's like, whatevs. I got this.
He just walks in. He's looking at the ground in front of him, but doesn't see him till he looks up. Like, what is it, Kitty Pride? Like, what the hell is going on here? That's one of my favorites. Oh, you mentioned the president, but you didn't do it strong enough because you talk about the Oval Office. The Oval Office is great. But there's a scene where he sits there and he calls the Israeli prime minister. And it's like, you got to set – because that's it. You're going to kill the president's daughter unless you release these 50 prisoners. And so he calls the Israeli prime minister and he's like, I haven't got 24 hours. You got to do it now. My daughter's going to die. And then he calls the FBI and he goes, FBI, please tell the terrorists that it's happening. We don't have confirmation yet, but it's on its way. And then he does my all-time favorite piece of dialogue. Now, I'd like to point out that you can clearly see, and I have made sure that when our friend James Cotta is going to be doing the write-up, that he has the picture of this office and him on the phone. You can clearly see that the phone he's using does not have a phone cable attached. If you guys want to look at that picture right now, if you had missed that, right there, you can see.
I also enjoyed that he had both touch tone and rotary phones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, he just presses one button and then he gets the person he wants always. So, okay, there's a piece of dialogue here. Now, I was going to just repeat it. I'm instead going to play it. I'm hoping this comes off. Oh.
Hello. It's the president. Would you please get me Marine Corps General Kyle Gray in Virginia? If he's not in his home, you try his country club. go ahead and pour you do that for me, will you? It's a president. Thank you.
I don't know why that strikes me. The fact that he had to say he's the president twice in 12 seconds.
Because, because you know the president doesn't have direct lines to anybody specific. He just picks it up and somebody random answers the phone. You know, so it's just like, who is this? What? Oh, the president. Oh. The president
of
what?
I wanted to not do it, but I forgot it was the president.
Yeah.
Like, fully again. There's another scene. We talk about the stealthily way that Hackstone breaks into this bean factory. He does it by walking out into the mid-sun, turning, stopping, and looking at the window where the terrorists are looking out from. Then, my favorite part, he's inside the bean, and he's running down the hallway, and he runs down the hallway, and there's ways. He's constantly turning. He's spinning around, slowing himself down, taking five times longer. Like, he's looking everywhere. I'm like, that's not how people stealthily move. In a circle, going down a hallway.
With the gun out.
He's just pirouetting.
I had that in my notes as well, but I called it the pirouette technique of...
Yeah. The pirouette technique, it's unbelievable. And like I say, yeah, it's so much. But I know I don't want to take them all, and I know I didn't. Unfortunately, it takes 40 minutes for any of this to really start for me, so I can only give it an 8. But after that, it's a 20 overall, an 8.
Stan had kind of quickly touched on the sound mix just falling to pieces late in the film. It's like a channel disappeared or something, because some, like you said, some of them are crystal clear and some of them are missing, and then gunshots are either missing or super muted. Like when Cameron Mitchell's assistant shoots a guy, the guy falls into the pool, and then he shoots 7 more shotgun rounds into this guy. Yes. Like he killed his mom. Like, it's he just empties a shotgun into this guy.
I love the guy who's actually getting the tea at that point, who's looking out the window, asks the other guy if he wants tea. The guy goes yes. Then somebody comes from behind while he turns his back. Luckily, he comes from behind while his back is turned. Hits that other guy out. And then the guy runs off. But if you look, you can still see from the window the guy lying on the ground. The guy making the tea cannot miss the guy now lying on the ground. Completely ignores it.
Well, and a crucial event that happens in this is that the cops almost get spotted when someone says, "Why is that dog barking?" And there is no dog barking in this scene. Yes. Everyone has to go investigate the dog that does not exist.
Yes, I remember. I said dog barking, there's no dog. They couldn't even, like, how did I give this a 2 for more heart than, they couldn't even bother to put in, some sounds of a dog barking. Like, how much effort would that have taken?
I didn't get any of that because I was still wondering why they were sending the world's oldest black oldest, fattest black cop in Beverly Hills to take care of this situation.
And less fat than and less drunk than Cameron Mitchell, who also said.
I mean, he did bring a samurai cop with him. The samurai cop who takes out one of the guys silently. Very stealthy.
He was great.
The timeline of this movie is amazing to me because I believe the initial demands are you have 12 hours, and I'm almost positive that because they play the demands twice within 5 minutes.
Yeah,
they show them recording it, and then a guy on TV plays them back, so that just to make sure that you've gotten their demands, and then later they tell you the demands again, like just 5 more minutes later, just making sure that is sunk in. And then when Frank Stallone shows up, he's talking to Cameron, and he says, "It's like I told the president yesterday."
Yes, when he didn't talk to the president yesterday, told by that same guy that I got and the Marine guy to get a hold of him. He never talked to the president, but like I told the president yesterday. That's right.
That is awesome. And there's one point, what was that line he has? Something where he calls Cameron Mitchell an asshole. It's like the greatest, there's the second greatest line of dialogue of all time. I can't even remember exactly what it was.
I think the incompetence of everyone at their job is striking to me. We talked about the reporter. The reporter has a great line where it says he's talking about, you know, Cameron Mitchell's been put in charge of this, and in this reporter's opinion, his work is cut out for him.
We have a couple of movies that have.
How is he the only reporter and the only crew to show up at this place? Which nobody else has figured out. There's being held news conferences and everything.
Oh, and he and Cameron Mitchell like on camera, they hated each other. That was great.
We also have when the terrorists are making an attack
on the mail.
I was gonna skip that over, but do you routinely do payoffs to cops by mail? Is that the way you
have? Yeah, I thought that was just slang to say, yeah, you're getting paid.
Could be. The dispatcher, the police officer dispatcher, calls up the newspaper to let them know where they are. Yeah. Him.
That dispatcher also, if you were paying attention to the bottom of your frame, that dispatcher has 3-inch long fingernails and just mashes the keyboard through the entire scene. She does not press a single key. She's just mashing. During the attack on Rodeo Drive, one of the terrorists who has an Uzi, which if you're not familiar with it, is a fully automatic machine pistol. And he is pressing that trigger like it's a squirt gun. Yes. He's just briefing on that squirt gun over and over and over through the entire scene. There's one last little bit that was just perfect for me and just sums up this film. In one of Frank Stallone's first scenes, right after he's talked about the photo, explained the photo of the guy that is about to be vital to the story. They start zooming in on Frank Stallone, and then you hear the sound of gunfire and screams, and I'm like, man, I didn't think they could afford to do a flashback to Vietnam. And then they don't.
They just have a picture.
they have the sound come up, and I'm about to go to a no. That's not what's gonna happen in this scene. 10 for me as well. Memorable moments.
Well, the most memorable thing about this movie, in my opinion, is absolutely Cameron Mitchell. Whenever he opened his mouth, there was a good chance. I mean, we talked about the super fucking trace, because that I'm never going to forget super trace. That's stuck in my mind. One of my favorite lines from Cameron Mitchell, though, is like, in the early stages, they're at the police station, and they found out that the president's daughter is being kidnapped. And he says, "Yes, I am watching the goddamn news. What are you watching? A porno movie?"
I wrote that line down. Yeah, that was awesome.
Like this, every time he opened his mouth, it was pure genius. And I am more than willing to bet that none of it was actually scripted.
He couldn't remember the script.
No. Well,
none of them good.
No, and nor should he. And then, honestly, like the fact that this movie was so obviously sponsored by Pepsi, because every two or three scenes there would be a can or a bottle of Pepsi perfectly up to camera, faced properly.
Probably sued them for putting them in this.
Pepsi was in the
hero shot of Pepsi.
There was a lot of companies that were actually in the credits. I mean, I know how this got made, because they got corporate sponsorship. There's no question.
You've got a Stallone attached.
Yeah, and a Stallone. Yeah, that's right. This one's going to stick with me. There's no question about it. I mean, the first 40-odd minutes, probably not. But yeah, there's going to be some great moments. I'm going with an 8.
Wow. I don't think I'm going to remember this movie that much. I am definitely going to remember Cameron Mitchell, because this is my favorite Cameron Mitchell performance I have seen so far, and I haven't seen many outside of this podcast. So Yeah, I'm going to remember him. Frank Stallone is fairly forgettable just because he's Frank Stallone. Because he's just an actor who kind of looks like his brother. So I can only go as high as a 6.
I can't even go close to that. I got a 2. This is completely forgettable. Strong in WTFs, completely forgettable as a film. Completely standard, no effort made. I'll forget about this 10 minutes after we're done here. Not a single moment that is a moment that's good moment that they created.
Huh. Exactly the opposite. I could watch this movie again, like right after the show.
Yeah.
I thought there was so much more that I could have gotten out of it if I'd seen it a second time. And quotes are heavy on that. I mean, Cameron Mitchell has a speech about that the laws are upheld by the common citizen, the private citizen. That's why Frank Stallone should stick with this. He's asked by a reporter if this mission's going to be successful. And he says, look in your crystal ball. And if he fails, then we'll need your crystal ball. Both of them. But Frank Stallone, he's called back. He's called back to service. And he looks at his wife. He says, I got to do this. It's, it's the president calling. And he says, the filmmakers are setting up the great hero of this tale, the one that's going to inspire us. And he looks at his wife and says, I'm not too great at making decisions.
That's right. That's right. But that's all Boogaloo still.
So I'm up at a 9 on this. Crazy concept.
This, this is one of those areas where the movie is going to fall down. I mean, you talk about canon films, you talk about the Arab terrorists and that kind of thing. The only area where I feel like this is actually inventive is because they've completely missed the point of an action hero that will save us all. Because Hack Stone, despite having an awesome name, is a really shitty action hero. He doesn't want to fight. He's like, oh, you really want to do this? Like, but we're buddies. Like, you could stop. Okay?
Yeah, he's sitting there. Remember when he's sitting there going, I'm a private citizen. And then Cameron Mitchell says to him, not anymore, you're not. But it's up to you if you want to do this. Yeah. Like, what?
So I mean, that's the only area is to create an action movie that has the worst action star in the universe as it. So I'll give it a 3 for that.
Yeah, if you said to me starring Frank Stallone, I'm going to assume this movie. I don't think I've seen another Frank Stallone movie. I could be wrong. I don't remember. They're all obviously not that memorable. But I'm going to assume he's fighting terrorists. And it's not very good. And Cameron Mitchell may be in it. So, 1.
Yeah, I got a 2 on this as well. It sucks. I'm giving it all these low scores. I think I was looking forward more to talking about this movie than I would be to watching it again. Like, I knew watching it, it's like I started laughing at 40 minutes in and had a blast from there on in. But as a total thing, I guess I wasn't enjoying it as overall as much as I knew I would enjoy it, though, talking to you guys about it, because it's got so much great moments to talk about and laugh about. But man, yeah, I'm disappointed that I have to give it such a low score again. But it's just total paint by numbers 80s action film plot, and yeah, it's a 2.
I think it's a blender of those things, though, because none of them I don't think you could. I don't know how you pitch this film when it's like 5 different films, and also you're like, it does the psycho thing of your star not showing up until halfway through the film.
But it's not having to pitch it when it's in Israel. I think they're having to pitch it Israeli filmmakers. That I think that changes it.
It's 87 films in. I guess I misunderstand this category. four for me. So each season we have 6 secret modifiers. Let's see now. This we do not. It doesn't get the low rated, but it came close. It does get two bonuses. One for introducing Frank Stallone to the Octagon. Also gets the obscurity bonus of having fewer than 500 votes on IMDb. And this season we have a modifier that we call the Will of the Gods, where a film can be punished if I roll an 8 on an 8-sided die. Time to see if it's number.
I hope it
number comes up literally. It's a 6.
That's good.
All right.
Good. I didn't want to see it get punished anymore.
That is a final score of 63 out of 100, which is pretty respectable and puts it tied with Cast a Deadly Spell.
Have we actually done 87 movies?
Yeah, this is the 11th series, so yes, it'll be 88 films at the end of the series.
Maybe
this, by Stan, recheck my math. I've made that mistake before.
You meant 888 movies, right?
Yeah, 1700.
Yes. Well, let me tell you, watching Food Fight, it felt like watching 100 movies.
See, for me, the thing about Terror in Beverly Hills is that I know that it's not. It was never going to overtake Miami Connection in this season. It was just fun to watch, but it wasn't quite as over the top fun as a Miami Connection, or to go back to Deadly Prey or Ninja 3, that kind of thing. So like some of these movies that we watched, it was just a little too standard to be amazing.
All the highest scoring films have a certain energy about them. It doesn't quite have that. So, I mean, but yeah, it's still a fun film.
Absolutely. I'm glad.
Know, like I say, I want people to watch it.
I'm glad I watched it. There's no question about that. Yeah.
We did it for the show. I think it's going to be a great episode for people to listen to. I had so much fun talking about it.
And I agree with Jim. I would watch it again. But, you know, speaking of you, Jim, let's do some business.
All right. We are sponsored by WeTalkPodcasts.com. That is the home of the Octagon, where we keep track of all of our films in the search for the ultimate B-movie. They have a Facebook and they have a Twitter. And we are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And please subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app and or on YouTube.
All right. Well, next episode, we wrap up our inaugural entering of the Octagon with Jim's I Hate Sand, It Gets Everywhere season. Why don't you tell us what that means?
Well, if this were to take the top spot, then this would be an entire season of films that take place in, on, or adjacent to sand.
Okay, that seems pretty easy to, so it's easy to understand.
You got your desert films, you got your 8,000 Dune versions, you got your 4,200 Mad Max versions.
Anything on Mars, right?
You got The Sand. I don't know if I've mentioned that film before on the podcast. you got the Sand Sharks. That's all of these, the connecting fiber being sand.
It's fair. I would be more than happy to do this season because there's a lot of movies with sand. But the movie that we are specifically talking about next episode is Road to Hell, which is something. It is definitely something. I think we need to
I will give you money, actually, if you tell me what.
Yeah, you have until our next recording to come up with a summary.
Yes. Well, speaking of that next recording, let's move along and get there. So I'm done talking, pretty much. Anybody else have anything to say? No.
I have one last observation to make.
Okay.
That observation, you guessed it, Frank Stallone.
Frank Stallone. Excellent.
I did not listen to it. I noticed there was some things with Frank Stallone that were put in our kind of group drive thing there. What are those?
I actually expected that Jack would have, I was expecting Jack to step on the joke first, but if he didn't even get it, which really took away from it. On Saturday Night Live, when Norm MacDonald was hosting the SNL news,
oh yes,
he had a running joke where he would say something like, "There was a giant oil spill off Long Island Sound, and they have determined the cause of it. The cause, you guessed it, Frank Stallone.
Frank Stallone,
and it was the punchline. Yeah, like, you know, it's
a crash there in the highway. You know, 14 people dead, and the cause of it. What date? You know, you guessed it, Frank Stallone."
and Norm stopped doing it because Sylvester Stallone asked him not to do it anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sylvester Stallone had hosted the show, and he said, "You do that joke about Frank. Could you not do that?" He's like, I feel bad for the guy. So if you could not, he's like, "Well, no, obviously not."
All right. Well, let's now that everybody has the backstory on that, let's go out. So, for Jim, and for Jack, and for Nick, and for Frank, and for Norm, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thank you for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
AIP Home Video presents Frank Stallone in Terror in Beverly Hills. From the turmoil of the Middle East to the streets of Beverly Hills comes a violent wave of terrorism causing death and destruction to everything in its path. Their next target, the president's daughter. And only one man has the skill and the daring to confront the terrorist leader.
Look, Captain, I know I do. This bunch, they fight real dirty. And the only way you're gonna whip their ass is to fight dirtier than them.
What is Hackstone's first move?
Why don't you look in your crystal ball?
And if that fails?
Then we'll need your crystal ball. Both of them.
Alone in Terror in Beverly Hills.